Hello everyone, it's Mark Badeka here. Welcome to the NT Pod, the podcast all about the New Testament and Christian origins. It's episode 63, and today we're looking at contradictory Christmas stories. Lots of us know the Nativity story. People like me who grew up in the UK not only got to perform Nativity plays if we went to church, but also when we went to school too. And it was something which was a mainstay of every single Christmas. And if you have your own kids, then you get to go to several Nativity plays again. And you'll see one year your kids will be a king, another year there'll be an angel, another year if you're lucky there might be Mary. And we have that familiar thing with the shepherds dressed in their dressing gowns with tea towels over their head for some reason. Joseph also, this standard costume seems to be tea towel, dressing gown, that type of thing. If you're a king, you might have made the crown yourself with a bit of silver foil or shiny paper of some sort. And it's generally held to be fairly delightful, and lots of cooing from the mums and the dads and the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents that are there. But one of the things about these Nativity plays is that they are actually one of the best representations that you can find of harmonization of the Gospels. Two out of the four Gospels tell the birth of Jesus. That's Matthew and Luke. Mark and John, completely different. Mark and John begin rather dramatically in different ways. Mark with the beginning of Jesus' public ministry, John with a kind of elaborate poem that takes Jesus back to before the beginning of the cosmos. But Matthew and Luke begin with the story of Jesus' birth, and they're both similar in that respect. But then as soon as we start looking at Matthew's and Luke's birth stories in detail, it's remarkable to see the differences, not the similarities. And one of the basic things to any historical approach to the Gospels is to try and make sense of what on earth is going on in the differing birth narratives of Matthew and Luke. I like to set sometimes a task for my students where they just sit down and compare the texts of Matthew and Luke and just create lists of the sheer number of differences in the way that they tell what's supposed to be the same story. If you've never had a look yourself, you'll probably be quite surprised by the sheer number of differences. I mean, in Matthew's Gospel, the Annunciation is made to Joseph, whereas in Luke, the Annunciation is made to Mary. In Matthew, the whole story centres around Bethlehem, but in Luke, it begins in Nazareth and they only go subsequently to Bethlehem. And in Matthew, the story seems to just focus on Bethlehem, where we assume Mary and Joseph have their home. Whereas in Luke, they go to Bethlehem as the result of a census. They travel down to Bethlehem, and then you get the story about the baby being in the manger. In Matthew, you have this political story about Herod, the Magi. You get this appalling story of the slaughter of the innocents. Luke doesn't have any of that. He instead has shepherds coming to view the baby Jesus, and you have celebrations and angels. When you start clocking up all these differences, you almost begin to wonder if one or the other of them is deliberately trying to cast the story differently. Perhaps that's where the key to this whole problem lies. But it's a real problem, and I think it's one that we need to take seriously. We don't notice it usually because we're so familiar with the harmonized versions of our culture. I mean, I love Jesus films. And I love the Jesus of Nazareth, 1977, the Franco Zeffirelli film, for example, which has the most wonderful birth story in it. And it's an amalgam of the different elements in Matthew's birth narrative and Luke's birth narrative. Or you look at the recent BBC nativity, and the same thing's true again. Or you look at the Catherine Hardwick nativity. Again, same thing. You see this harmonization of the story. So when you actually go and sit down and look at Matthew and Luke look at Matthew and Luke separately, it's really surprising just how different they are. Now, on the standard view of the Gospels, Matthew and Luke are independent of one another. Luke did not write his Gospel with any knowledge of Matthew. That's the consensus view in the literature. That's why most New Testament scholars refer to a document called Q, because there's so much stuff in Matthew and Luke that is practically identical or very, very close that you have to say that the material that they didn't derive from Mark came from somewhere. And so if they didn't know each other, well, it must have come from something that we don't have any access to these days, which is, for convenience, labelled Q. And it's even an argument for the independence of Luke and Matthew sometimes. A lot of scholars say, look, if Luke had been reading Matthew's gospel, surely he would have copied out bits of Matthew's birth story. So I find myself asking the question, is it the case that their stories are completely independent of one another? Is it impossible that one knows the other? Well, as some loyal listeners will know, I think that Luke used Matthew's gospel, not because of this material, but because of the substantial similarities later on in the Gospels. And the strong case that I think can be made for Luke's familiarity, not only with Mark's Gospel, but also with Matthew's Gospel. But for someone like me who thinks that Luke had a copy of Matthew's Gospel or was consulting Matthew's Gospel, you do have to say, well, what on earth is going on in the birth narrative? Why does he turn away so dramatically from the story in Matthew? Well, one way to treat the issue is to note that, in fact, there are several remarkable similarities. And because we focus so much on the differences, quite rightly, and because, you know, we do tasks like setting our students to look at the differences between the Gospels, we actually miss some of the real similarities. I mean, the really big ones are things like Jesus's conception of a virgin. It's assumed by most scholars, although some disagree, that both Matthew and Luke are describing a virginal conception of Jesus. At the very least, they're describing a conception out of wedlock. Matthew and Luke agree on this really key detail. You get the annunciation by an angel, you get the birth in Bethlehem. So you do have all sorts of little similarities clustering around the place in Matthew and Luke. There's even quite a close similarity in one key phrase between the two. In the Annunciation to Mary and to Joseph, you get exactly the same phrase about giving birth to a son, and then the phrase, "You shall call his name Jesus," in Matthew 1:21 and Luke 1:31. And that's probably a little sign, I think, that Luke has taken over this phrase from Matthew's Gospel. After all, it's much more appropriate, this phrase is, in Matthew's Gospel, because the angel is addressing Joseph, who is told, "You will call his name Jesus," you singular. In Luke's Gospel, the angel Gabriel is speaking to Mary, when that angel says to Mary, "You singular will call his name Jesus," it doesn't quite work, because the person that names Jesus is the Father. In fact, Luke makes a great big deal of the fact that Father normally names the Son in the story of the birth of John the Baptist and Zechariah and so on. So it looks like there we've got a little bit of Luke taking over something from Matthew. But of course, that's not a great deal. It's not a great deal to go on. I wouldn't build a case for Luke's familiarity with Matthew from there. I'm just saying that given that the case can be made elsewhere for Luke's use of Matthew, that's where I think you can see evidence of that here too. And of course, the differences are really telling. And I think the reason that the differences are telling are that Luke is trying to do something a little bit different from Matthew. He's trying to cast the story a little bit differently in spite of those few similarities. I'll give you a couple of examples of the kind of thing that I mean. If you look at the story of the Annunciation, for example, in Matthew's Gospel, it's to Joseph. The whole story is constructed from Joseph's perspective. It's what people used to call back in the day an MCP, a male chauvinist pig. Matthew is seeing things from the perspective of purely of the father. And is what these days we more appropriately just call sexism. But when you get to Luke's gospel, it's fascinating because it's almost like Luke has noticed how strange it is only to be thinking about the father here when it's the young girl Mary who's going to be giving birth. So Luke tells the whole story from her perspective. I think it's almost like Luke has seen how odd it is to have this story expressed purely from Joseph's perspective. And instead what he does is he tells it from Mary's perspective. And actually, at the end of the day, Luke's story is much more memorable for that. It's a powerful story and it gives Mary this character that actually then lasts across the centuries. Luke's Annunciation to Mary is one of those stories that really gets remembered and remembered and retold and retold. And I'll give you another example, a second example. In Matthew's Gospel, the adoration of the Magi, the wise men come to worship Jesus. Luke doesn't have anything of the Magi. Lots of scholars say, well, if Luke had known Matthew, he would have included the Magi in his story. I say I don't think Luke would, you know, because if I were Luke, I wouldn't have included the Magi. And I'll tell you why. Luke doesn't like Magi. I mean, our word magician is related to the same Greek word, Magi. Luke doesn't like the kind of people who do sorcery, astrologers, these sorts of people. In fact, one of the great villains of his second volume, Acts of the Apostles, is a Magus. Magus is singular of Magi. Simon Magus is a baddie. He's not going to begin his gospel by introducing Magi. So instead what he does is he introduces far more appropriate Lucan-type characters of shepherds, and it fits in with Luke's whole sympathy for the downtrodden, the poor in society. So it's not surprising that he uses the shepherds instead of Magi. And the thing is, I have to say that, and this is probably will be not a terribly scholarly thing to say, but if one asks about one's aesthetic preferences, it's very easy to see why someone like Luke would have done what he's done, because his story is so memorable, it's so beautifully told. For a start, it's far longer than Matthew's story. And one of the things that is quite remarkable about Luke's birth narrative is he's got songs in it. And we don't often notice this, but because, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, on the whole, don't have songs in. Basically, what you have is prose narrative, and then every now and then you get these nice sort of poetic moments. But basically, it's standard prose narrative. But just for this short bit of Luke's gospel, we have the story interspersed with songs. So Mary gets her own song, the Magnificat. Zechariah gets his own song, the Benedictus. Simeon gets his own song, the Nunc Dimittis. And then we have these great choruses going on in the heavens when the shepherds are celebrating the birth of Jesus and the angels are celebrating the birth too. And that, again, makes Luke's birth narrative hugely memorable. I suspect that Luke thought that he could improve on Matthew's story, that he could do something a bit better and a bit different. And that's why I don't in any sense condemn Luke for what he's done and think that perhaps that was his intention from the beginning. And I, for one, am grateful to Luke for that story, because it's a story that, whatever your own religious beliefs are, is still quite a remarkable story to read and to celebrate. And if you are celebrating Christmas, then a very happy Christmas to you. If you're not, then I'll say what everyone says here in America: happy holidays, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks for listening. This has been Mark Podacre on the NT Pod. It's always good to have your company. You can find me on the web at podacre.blogspot.com. You can find me on iTunes. Go to Duke University's iTunes U, or follow us on Twitter. You'll find me at Goodacre, or go to the Facebook NT Pod page. Thanks again for listening. Look forward to seeing you soon. Bye-bye.